All right. So I guess for this conference, it's a little late to review Shimura varieties, but let me just give the setup. So I have a Shimura datum, and I choose a compact open subgroup of the Delic points, and then I form this double quotient. So this is an algebraic variety over the complex numbers, and it has a model over a number field, the reflex field, which is so I take this algebraic co-character determined by H, and it's the field of definition of the conjugacy class, this co-character. Sorry? That's better, right? Yeah, but now I'm blocking. Okay, fine. Okay, so what do we want to do? I want to study, in fact, Shimura varieties equipped with some extra structure. The simplest example is, of course, the case of a moduli space of polarized abelian varieties, and that corresponds to the symplectic group. And just to make the relationship explicit, if you want to relate this to the Shimura variety for the symplectic group to the moduli space of polarized abelian varieties, then you choose a lattice. So the Hodge co-character in this case gives a decomposition of your V. So you have a Q vector space with a symplectic pairing. The Hodge character gives a decomposition, and then if you choose a lattice, then if you take this quotient, this is an abelian variety. So if you choose the lattice, you get a module interpretation of this as a moduli space of the polarized abelian varieties. And I'm going to be interested in the case where my Shimura datum has an embedding into the one for symplectic type. So this means that G embeds into the symplectic group, and it induces an embedding of this conjugacy class into the one for the Siegel double space, the one for the symplectic Shimura variety. And this implies that if you choose your level structures correctly, you get an embedding of the Shimura varieties too. So once you have such an embedding, then it's the kind of tautology that, you have this universal family of polarized abelian varieties here, you can pull it back. So in some sense, it's a tautology that this is a moduli space for abelian varieties equipped with extra structures. And you can make explicit what it means for extra structures. This family carries a collection of Hodge cycles. So we're going to see later a construction of the Hodge cycles for such a Shimura variety. So we'll see what those extra structures are. And of course, if the extra structures are endomorphisms, then this is what's called a PL type. So there's a slightly more general class. Namely, once you have the Shimura varieties of Hodge type, you can consider ones which are in some sense quotients of these. These are called abelian types. So what does quotient mean? I mean, luckily it's a little bit more, there's a kind of, would be a naive version of quotient, where you have a map, you have kind of G2X2 of Hodge type, and then you have a map from this Shimura datum to that one. But in fact, that's a little bit inflexible. There's a kind of more flexible notion, which is just that you just have a surjection on the derived groups, which induces an isomorphism on the edgerent Shimura data. So again, this means that this surjection induces an isomorphism on the adjoint group, so it's essential isogeny. And then if you have a Shimura datum, you can just take the image of this co-character H, this conjugacy class in the adjoint group, and that gives you a conjugacy class in the adjoint group. Okay, so you're required to satisfy this. okay. So the point is, we'll see this a little later, that in such a situation, the Shimura variety for this guy, this quotient, it's in some sense a quotient of the one for that guy, in the sense that the connected components for the Shimura variety for GX can be described in terms of the Shimura variety for G2X2. And so if you look at this larger class, these were studied by Deline, and he kind of classified which Shimura data are of this type, of abelian type. So if you have a GX, you can write it like this. And the answer is that almost every Shimura variety where the group G is a classical group, meaning non-exceptional, is of this type. But there's an almost. I mean, there's something special case in the case of an even orthogonal group. But it's close to being everything, I think. So we want to study integral models. And I'll be interested in the case where you have a smooth model. In fact, the main result today will be that there's a smooth model. So for that, you need a condition on the level structure at P, and what's called being hyperspecial. So this means that your KP is a compact open subgroup of G of QP, and it's called hyperspecial if there's a reductive model for your group G over ZP, G of ZP, such that KP is just the ZP points of this guy. So this implies that KP is maximal compact, but it's stronger. And you can, so there's a condition for such groups to exist. G should be unramified. In other words, quasi-split at P and split over an unramified extension. And, so this is just some notation. So this is just notation for the following conjecture. So the conjecture is that in the setup, there's a kind of good integral model of the Shimura-Bide. So to be precise, I'd look at the ring of integers of my field E over which the Shimura-Bide is defined to take a prime dividing P. And the statement is that there's an integral model over P. So what do you mean by that? What do we mean by that? I mean, if you have the Shimura-Bide, what could it mean to have a good integral model? An integral model, whatever it is, in this case, we want to be smooth. So we want an extension of the Shimura-Bide to a smooth scheme over this discrete valuation ring, right? Or if you like, a smooth tower. So one thing you don't want to lose is this tower of Shimura-Bides has an action of the idyllic group. The idyllic points of the group with trivial component in the P. So you want the model at least to be equivariant. Okay. But if you stop there, this somehow wouldn't have any content because you can just take the original Shimura-Bide itself. That's smooth. You want, in some sense, to say this is a non-trivial extension. And if your Shimura-Bide is compact, then you could insist that this guy is proper. Right? But you know just from the case of, say, just from the case of modular curves. I mean, modular curves are not compact, but nevertheless, there's kind of a notion of good integral model. And so there's an extension property that you require this to have, which was formulated by Milne, which makes it non-trivial. And the easiest way to think about this is that if I think of the whole tower of the Shimura-Bides, where I let the prime to P level get smaller and smaller, so I have this whole tower, then one way to formulate the extension property, or at least it implies the following condition, that if I have a mixed characteristic discrete valuation ring, and I have a point in the generic fiber of this tower of its fraction field, then it extends. So in other words, the model should have the property that it should satisfy the valuative criterion, the usual valuative criterion, for mixed characteristic valuation rings. So that kind of makes sense because, you see, if I have a point in a discrete valuation ring for this guy, and I imagine I'm in the case of a moduli space of abelian varieties, right? Well, the level here, away from P, is getting smaller and smaller. So if I have a point, that means that if I look at the abelian variety, that means that over this discrete valuation ring, whatever it is, I actually have a trivialization of the whole Elliptic Tate module for any prime L different from P. Okay, so that means the Shimura-Bide, the abelian variety has good reduction. So it's saying that if the analog of the condition that if this was a moduli space of abelian varieties, that if you have a point where the abelian variety has a good reduction, then it should extend into the model. Okay, so that's the conjecture when KP is hyperspecial. And here's an example just to kind of see that you need this condition that KP is hyperspecial. So let's suppose that we have a moduli space of abelian varieties. So it's defined, it's associated to some vector space, Q vector space V with a symplectic form C. And, to make it a moduli space of abelian varieties, we should choose a lattice, a Z lattice. And then let me take KP to be the stabilizer of the ZP points of the lattice. Okay. So then this group is hyperspecial if and only if some scalar multiple of C, C is usually only defined up to a scalar multiple anyway, induces a perfect pairing on this lattice. So in that case, if that's the case, right, then this KP is just the ZP points of the corresponding symplectic group. So then if it induces a perfect pairing, it defines this, I mean, you can look at the symplectic group and take the ZP points, and that's clearly equal to KP. So that's the condition that's hyperspecial. On the other hand, if you think about this in terms of the moduli space of abelian varieties, then you can see that that the fact that this C is perfect means that the degree of the polarization, the C is perfect on VZP, means that you're looking at abelian varieties with the degree of polarized abelian varieties with the degree of the polarization is prime to P. So you can see that the smoothness corresponds to the fact that KP is hyperspecial. So if the degree is prime to P, then you have a good moduli space smooth model. So you see the connection between the two things. So of course it wouldn't be enough just that KP is maximal there. So here's the result. So if P is bigger than 2 and KP is hyperspecial, and you have a Shimura datum of abelian type, then this admits a smooth integral model, by which I mean satisfying the extension property that we had before. I should mention that I think this condition P bigger than 2 is close to being removed, but somehow there are several things to do, and most of them are now gone. So. Yes, yes. I should have mentioned also that, I mean, to do that, I should have given you the full version of the extension property. So it's unique. Sorry? The question is I was vague about this extension property. I said it implied a kind of evaluative criteria for DVRs, but wouldn't obviously uniquely determine the model. But in fact, the extension property is formulated for kind of regular, some points in regular schemes, and that's done exactly, it's done exactly so that you can see that if this guy is smooth and has the extension property, then it's the unique smooth thing with that extension property. One interesting thing I actually wanted to mention earlier, so I said when I was talking about the extension property, I said, well, if your Shimura variety happens to be compact, you could insist that the model is proper, right? And if we don't have that, then you have this extension property. But then there's a reasonable question, well, suppose your Shimura variety is compact, right? Does this imply that your model is compact? So that doesn't actually obviously follow from this extension property. But it is true. I think you're going to hear about that on Friday. So it is true that when this guy is compact, then this model is proper. But it doesn't follow easily from what I'm going to explain today. It requires extra work. Okay. So the construction of this is somehow, easy. So in the case of Hodge type, the idea is that you have an embedding of your Shimura variety into the one which is a moduli space for abelian varieties. So I've chosen some level structures here. And then for this one, you already have a moduli space of abelian varieties. And I'm not assuming that K prime P is hyperspecial. So this could be some horrible thing, right? So you have the embedding, and then you just take the closure of this guy in this integral model for the moduli space of abelian varieties. And the idea that you should do this goes back to at least to Milne. This is the approach that kind of Falsinger and Vasey were trying. And so the difficulty is to show when you do this, this is smooth. Okay? Just to kind of a dramatic effect, as I said, this guy could be horrible, right? So you're taking the closure. It's not at all clear that this should be smooth. And the idea is that you're meant to identify this with, that you write down a certain, so you want to describe the local structure of your integral model. And the idea is that you want to write down a certain deformation problem and show that it describes this closure correctly. Sorry, I should have said you take the closure and then you take the normalization. Okay. But even to formulate this deformation problem, you need something. So I'm going to explain what you need. You need a kind of result about Hodge cycles and the crystalline realizations. So I'm going to explain what you need. So before I do that, let me now make explicit the structures that these Shimura varieties of Hodge type carry. Okay, so we have our Shimura variety of Hodge type, we have a hyperspecial subgroup, we have a reductive model of our group, and the first thing I want to do is I choose a lattice in this, a ZP lattice in this, in the QP points of this vector space V, so that this embedding, so that the inclusion of KP into the p-adic points of, say, the symplectic group is actually induced by an embedding of reductive groups. So this is the kind of technical point. It's the theorem of Prasad and Yu that you can do this. Okay, so once you have this, so we're going to be using this group all the time. So once you have this, you can look at this embedding and kind of formulate the next construction. I want to make this general notation. If I have a ring, some ring R, and I have a finite free R module, I'm going to just write M tensor for the sum of all the product of the tensor powers of M and its dual. Okay, so if I have this, then I can do the following thing. I can look at this embedding here, and then one can show there's some collection of elements in this, not just VZP, but kind of all these tensor powers of VZP and its dual, such that if I look at the scheme theoretic stabilizer of those elements, then actually it's equal to this reductive subgroup GZP. Okay, so these elements are what are eventually going to give rise to our Hodge cycles. So we're going to be working with those. Right, so that's what we have. We have the embedding of our reductive subgroup GZP, which gives us our hyperspecial subgroup, and we have these elements. So using these, I can make the Hodge cycles over the Shimura variety, and this goes roughly as follows. So again, we fix a lattice, so I can get a moduli space of abelian varieties here, and then I have my universal polarized abelian variety, and then I can look at the local system over it. So at this moment, I just mean that this is some kind of local system of ZP, finite free ZP modules. So at the moment, you should think of this just as a kind of topological object. But eventually, of course, it'll be an étale, a kind of p-adic étale local system. And the construction of this universal family from V, basically from the construction, this V was basic. Well, so it's a lattice. I mean, this V ends up being dual to the cohomology of the abelian variety from the construction. So this local system, point by point, can be identified with the dual of this guy. Okay, so if I work upstairs, right? So over the Siegel moduli space, I have this local system. Of course, upstairs is kind of the trivial local system. If I choose a guy here, then I can trivialize the cohomology, and then I restrict it to the subgroup here. Now, sorry, to the subspace corresponding to my x. And then the point of doing that is now these sections, these S alpha, that remember they were G invariant. They were constructed to be G invariant. So that means that actually they descend, if I think of them as sections of this local system, they actually descend from this guy down to the quotient here. I can divide out by G of Q. So I get just a collection of sections in this local system, but now thought of over the Shimura variety. And in fact, if you work a little harder, you can show this even works arithmetically. In other words, they descend down to the reflex field. And this is related to Deligne's result that Hodge implies absolute Hodge. Okay, so what it means is we have a local system over the sky, and we have a bunch of sections. Okay. So if I look at a point, in my Shimura ID, so this is somehow the worst notation because K is the level and the field. So I knew about this, but I haven't found yet a good solution. But I don't think it really causes a problem. Here they appear together. Okay, so we have a point, and I'm just going to assume the point has a reduction, right? So this model so far is just constructed by taking the closure and the normalization in the Siegel modular variety. So it's something. So I take a point in this generic fiber which has a specialization, right? I want to study the structure of this in the neighborhood of this point. Then I can specialize these tensors of this local system at that point. Okay, so I get then some tensors in the corresponding Pierre de Ketel cohomology of the abelian variety at that point, and they're Galois invariant. This is just because already these are parallel sections. These are sections of this local system over the Shimura variety, over the field, the reflex field E. Okay. So we have these Galois invariant sections, right? So now what we can do is we can use Pierre de Coche theory. So this, if I look at the Pierre de Ketel cohomology, there's a relationship with the Dudenay module of the p-divisible group. So I look at the p-divisible group of the abelian variety. Yes. Yes. There's a tilde here. That should be a tilde there. Yeah. But that's a good question because in a second, so you see down here I have a different one, and there the x is deliberate. Okay. Yeah. Whenever you see an s alpha without a zero, it should be an x tilde. Yeah. That's the rule. Okay. So we have the Pierre de Ketel cohomology of this abelian variety. And you look at its p-divisible group. So you look at the p-divisible group for the special fiber, AX. And then you have this Pierre de comparison isomorphism. So, right, so the S alpha X tildes live in the left-hand side, but they are invariant. So they live in the Galois invariance of the right-hand side. And if you take the Galois invariance of the right-hand side, you just get the Dudenay module, but with P inverted. So you have some tensors here, okay? A priori, now this is kind of a subtle point. So here, I insisted that the X is deliberate here. So a priori from this construction, of course, it could be that the S alpha 0 X actually depends on X tilde, right? But in fact, it turns out it's in some sense independent. So that's why. But at the moment, if you like, it's just some construction. It depends on that. Okay, so here's the kind of key result from that we need, which lets you play this game of building the local model. So we have these tensors in the Dudenay module that we've built, and the statement is that actually the integral, so they're in the Dudenay, they're just in the tensor powers of the Dudenay module without inverting P, and that they define a reductive subgroup. That's the statement you need. All right. So let me explain how once you have this sketch, how once you have this, you get the your kind of local model, right? So remember, the idea is you want to study your Shimura variety locally around this point X. You're going to build some kind of local model using the deformation theory of p-divisible groups, and then you have to identify it with a formal neighborhood of this X. What the key lemma allows you to do is to build that local, is to kind of, well, actually to do both steps. Okay, so you have this key lemma. Okay, so that's the idea. X bar, where is X bar? Yeah, X bar, yeah, it's, that's right, it's just X, and in fact this should be a kind of curly S. Right. Oops. All right. So let's look at our p-divisible group at the point X, you can look at its universal, its versal deformation space, and look at the versal p-divisible group. Okay, so this is kind of by general theory. This is some formally smooth. This is formally smooth, and we can lift some. So it's just a power series ring over the bit vectors of the residue field of the point X, and so you can we can lift the Frobenius to it. And then if you look at the Lie algebra of the universal vector extension of the versal p-divisible group, this gives it some vector bundle. So this you think of this as kind of the Durham cohomology of this GU. And it's equipped with a connection, the Gass-Monin connection, and an action of Frobenius. So basically you're kind of taking the crystal for this p-divisible group and identify and evaluating it on your universal deformation space. So there's a filtration as well, which will play an important role. And so what one does, there's a construction of foldings that explicitly produces for you. Well, first of all, it gives an explicit, in some sense, a group theoretic construction of this U hat, this versal deformation space, but also explicitly produces for you in there a smooth subspace. And this subspace has the following property. So I start off with my G of X, right? But I also have a lifting of this p divisible group corresponding to the point X tilde. Okay? And then, so I have the, in any case, I have these tensors, S alpha 0 X. Okay? So you can think of them as living to begin with at one point of this U hat. Okay? And then the idea is that if they live at this one point of U hat, right, then I can use the connection just to parallel transport them to the whole of U hat. But I can only, this is a kind of rigid analytic construction. Okay? And then I can look at the subspace where those tensors stay in fill zero. Okay? So I look at this point, and then I look at the subspace where the tensors coincide, with these extended tensors, so I parallel transport the S alpha zero. This should be the parallel transport of S alpha 0 X, and that's called the thing with the tilde. Okay? So actually, if you did that, you would get an analytic subspace, but in fact, there's an explicit description that Foldings gives so that you see this is actually a formal subspace of this guy. Okay. So we have the subspace where the parallel transport of our sections lies in fill 0. So now we have to that's going to be our local model, actually, this guy. And now we want to compare this with the formal neighborhood of our point X on the Shimura variety. Okay? Now if we look at this formal neighborhood, then we have, at least on the generic fiber, some very similar looking structures, namely these S alphas. So I explained how they give kind of sections in the local system using kind of topological cohomology or Eital cohomology. You can do the same thing with the Durham cohomology, and then they give sections in the Durham cohomology of this universal abelian variety, and these are again parallel for the Gass-Monin connection, and they lie in fill zero. So on this NX, you have some very similar structures, and in fact, they have also the good property that if you, so to speak, specialize them. So if I have any point in this formal neighborhood of this X, right, then I can look at the corresponding abelian variety. Its Durham cohomology is the crystalline cohomology of its reduction after I extend scalars. Okay, and so in the right hand side I have this S alpha zero X, and the left hand side I have this guy, the Durham tensor, and these correspond. Okay, the reason for that is basically that by construction they correspond over here when X is X prime. Okay, but if you look at the I just take the completion, the formal completion at the point. Why? What do you mean? It's one point. I mean, I have a scheme. I have a point. I take the formal completion at the point. Yeah. Oh, sure. Okay. Fine. No, okay. But, yeah, but it makes... Okay, that's true. But it makes sense to talk about the k-bar points of this, nevertheless. I mean, x tilde is a k-bar point, if you want to be... Of course, that's right. I mean, it's... Yes. Sorry? Of course. Yes, yeah, specializes, that's the point. So it's a different... It still specializes to x. It's a different lifting of the same x that we're considering. Right? I had one lifting, which was this x tilde. Now I consider a different lifting. But this is not... Okay, if you want to be absolutely formal, I'm not considering a point of the formal scheme. I'm considering a k-bar point of the formal scheme. I mean, there's a difference between a point in the sense of topology and a point in the sense of a point with values in something. I mean, all I mean here, this is the formal spectrum of some ring R, right? It's just a homomorphism from R into k-bar. Okay, I didn't realize this would cause such a serious problem, but I think this is okay. Right. So the point is, yes, so I was explaining why under this isomorphism, this Durham tensor actually goes to this guy. So by construction, that's true with x tilde in place of x. Okay? But these S alpha Durhams, they're parallel sections, right? So if I want to get the x prime one, which would have a tilde, from the x one, then what I have to do is just start with the s alpha Durham x and then parallel transport it to x prime. But if you look at the definition of this isomorphism between crystalline Durham cohomology, you'll see it kind of basically is a kind of parallel transport. Okay? So in other words, this nx has a similar kind of structure. Right? It's equipped, at least on its generic fiber. Now I'm going to be in big trouble, because certainly if it only has one point, it doesn't have a generic fiber. But anyway, so if you like, the rigid analytic space of this guy, attached to this guy, is equipped with these sections, which look a lot like this, what we built on this guy here. Okay? And so if I look at the universal abelian variety over the sky, it gives rise to an embedding into the deformation space of the p-divisible group. And and then I claim this factors through the sky. And the argument for this is, well, this is something. It's whatever it is, it's kind of normal, so it's connected. So if I want to show it factors through this smooth subscheme, it's enough to check it at that point, and for that one uses that these S alpha Durhams lie in fill zero, right? So this was somehow, it's not quite the universal, but it has this property. So in fact, I've kind of simplified the discussion here. I mean, this is not quite really how it works, but morally speaking, this is how it should work. So the argument that I've written down actually gives more information, but it uses again, the key lemma at this point, x prime. But morally speaking, this is how it works. All right. So I want to sketch a proof of the key lemma, and for that I need to recall a little gadget from Peter-Hodge theory, which classifies, describes lattices and crystalline representations. So I take a perfect field of characteristic P, I look at its bit vectors, I have the fraction field, and then I take k over k0 totally ramified, and then I look at the absolute Galois group of k. Right? So we're interested, we're going to be interested in studying lattices and crystalline representations of this gk. So I pick, to set up the gadget, I just choose a uniformizer in k, and I choose an Eisenstein polynomial of this uniformizer pi, and then I have this very simple ring, just power series in one variable over w, right? W is w of little k, and I coef it with this very simple-minded Frobenius sending u to the p. And then I look at the following category. I look at finite free sigma modules over the string sigma. And, well, they're equipped with a Frobenius after inverting this polynomial e. So it's almost a kind of... The Frobenius is almost an isomorphism. There's kind of this... I have to invert It's an isomorphism after inverting E. Okay, so those are the modules. And I'm going to compare these to crystalline lattices and Galois stable lattices and crystalline representations. Okay, so that here's the theorem I'll need. The statement is that there's a fully faithful tensor functor from Galois stable lattices and crystalline representations to this other category, right? Remember, it's category of these modules. And so I'll need a few properties, but I'll remind you what they are so you don't, as when I use them. So the first thing is that if I specialize, if I have L and it goes to M of L and I specialize this at U and invert P, then I just get the decrease of V. And the D derama V also has a description. I guess I actually won't. I'm not sure. Well, so this the point is there's a canonical isomorphism like this. This other map sends U to pi. Okay, so the fiber at zero is decris, is naturally the decris, and the fiber at pi is naturally the D derama after I pull back by Frobenius there. The second thing is that if I look at the, if I localize the module, right, so I look at the, I have this map sigma, right, it's just a power series ring over W. So if I look at mod P, at this mod P fiber, I get a DVR and has a generic point given by the prime P, and I just localize at that prime. So then the statement is that there's a certain faithfully flat algebra over the sky, and over that faithfully flat algebra, there's a canonical isomorphism like this. Okay, the key thing is it's canonical. So compatible with tensor products and everything. I'll remind you about. And the last thing is the connection with the p-divisible group. So if this is the dual of the tape module of p-divisible group over OK, then the Dude and A module of the special fiber is just described by taking the reduction of M mod U and then pulling back by Frobenius. Right? So you can see here the decris is described kind of after inverting P, and this is basically a lattice, except for this Frobenius twist. Okay. So now I'm going to actually use this to prove the key lemma for you. So we're going to apply this with L, right? So the theorem, the input is a Galois stable lattice and a crystalline representation. So I'm going to take the lattice to be the integral et al. Cohomology, and then we have our reductive subgroup, GZP. It's defined by these tensors, and they're Galois stable. So since they're Galois stable, I can view them as morphisms from the unit object into this L tensor, right? And the point of viewing them this way is then I can apply my functor to M. So I get some morphisms, which I'll call S alpha tilde. So I'm kind of spreading them out over sigma. Now, one remark is, given just the existence of this functor, this implies one of the statements in the key lemma, right? Because if I now take these S alpha tildes and specialize them at U equals zero, then by what I had on the previous page, they produce, this would be S alpha zero, right? So they produce these crystalline versions of the Hodge tensors. But, so the first statement was that these guys should be in the Dude name module without inverting P, right? But that's the case by construction because I have a description. When I reduce this M mod U, if I pull back by Frobenius, I get the Dude name module, right? And these guys are in M, so when I reduce mod U, they're in the Dude name module. So just the existence of the M, I get from the existence of the M, I get that the I get that the integrality property I want. So the second statement that we needed was that if I look at these tensors inside the Dude and A module, they should define a reductive subgroup. Okay? So the idea is the following. We're going to show something even better. We're going to show that when I take these S alpha tildes, right, they live inside M tensor. Okay? So I can look at the subgroup defined by them. Okay? Now when I, that's just a closed subgroup. Could be horrible, right? I'm not claiming it's flat or anything. But I'm going to show that that is actually a reductive subgroup. So it's reductive of a sigma, and then when I specialize it u equals 0, then of course I get that the, because of this relation here, I get that the I get the statement that the S alpha 0 is defined in reductive subgroups. Okay. So one simplification I can make is I can, this statement is kind of invariant under extension of the field little k, so I can assume it's separably closed. That just makes some statements easier. Okay. So here's the strongest statement. So we're going to prove this, in fact, for any, so this last statement about the S alphas defining a reductive subgroup is actually true for any lattice in a crystalline representation. Okay. So that's what this is saying. So you have an L, it's a Galois-stable lattice in a crystalline representation. You give yourself a collection of tensors, GK, Galois-invariant tensors, which define a reductive subgroup of GL of this lattice L, GCP. And then you consider the corresponding tensors in M tensor. So the S alpha tildes you get by applying M to these S alphas, as I did before. And then the statement is that actually there's an isomorphism between M equipped with these tensors, the S alpha tildes, and L after xn scalars equipped with these alphas, which respects these guys. And so then it's clear that if you have this, I mean, the S alphas define a reductive subgroup in L. So certainly they define a reductive subgroup here, and so the S alpha tildes obviously define a reductive subgroup here. In fact, it's just the product if you give yourself that guy. Okay. So here's the proof. So the idea is, I mean, just the idea of the proof is, okay, so we have this module M over sigma, spec of sigma. It's important to use spec. And we want to show that the subgroup they define is reductive. And actually the way we're going to do, we're really interested in showing it's reductive at the fiber u equals zero. Right, at the closed point. But actually what we're going to do is first prove it's reductive everywhere else. So we kind of surround the closed point, and then we're going to deduce it for the closed point. Okay. So the idea is actually we're going to try to show that this M is isomorphic to this M prime. So I'm going to look at the scheme of isomorphisms between M and M prime, which take S alpha tilde to alpha. This is the thing which I claim exists. Okay. So a priori, this is kind of some something. I know nothing about it, but what I can say is either the fibers of this thing obviously are empty, or they're a torsor under this group. I mean, if I have one isomorphism, then they differ by automorphism. Any two differ by an automorphism of L, preserving the S alpha, which is exactly defines this group GZP. Okay, and the claim is that this is actually a torsor under this group, in particular it's flat, with non-empty fibers. And this implies the proposition just because I'm in a situation here where the residue field is separably closed, so I have a torsor under this group over a strictly Hanselian ring, so it's trivial. So that would mean that there's such an isomorphism. Okay, so we have to show this P is a torsor. Right, so here now I'm going to start to prove it at different points. So the first thing is if I look at the generic point of the mod P fiber of sigma, then it's a torsor there. And that just follows because we have this canonical isomorphism. Okay? So, in fact, it's, if I extend to this space, so if I extend to this, if I extend to this faithfully flat, ring, then this P just becomes the trivial CP torsor. But because this ring is flat over this localization, faithfully flat, then that means that this is actually a torsor. Okay. So now I want to study it at the point u equals 0, but after inverting p. So the claim it's a ZP torsor there, and that just follows because I had this isomorphism coming from usual periodic Hodge theory. So again, it's flat over some extension. Sorry, it's a torsor over some extension of the field, over some flat extension, so it's a torsor. So we have it at the generic mod p point, and at u equals 0, but in the generic fiber. And now I can extend a little bit outside the formal neighborhood of this u equals 0 in the generic fiber using the Frobenius. So once you have the isomorphism in step 2, it turns out you can just easily make an isomorphism like this you can, so in the formal neighborhood of this point, you can kind of trivialize M. You can identify it with its mod P fiber sense of this formal neighborhood compatible with Frobenius, and this is canonical, so that tells me that actually in a formal neighborhood of this point, it's also a ZP torsor. And now the most interesting, so we have it in a formal neighborhood of the point U equals zero and the generic point of the mod P fiber. The most interesting thing is the next step, so now we're going to invert P, and we're going to, so I have, when I invert P, the spectrum sigma is a disk, and I remove the also the point U equals zero, and I'm going to show it's a torsor there. This is actually, I think, the most interesting part of the argument. So I look at the maximal open set over which this P is flat with non-empty fibers when it'll be a torsor. Okay? So I know that this is non-empty because I already showed that it contains the generic point from step one. So therefore, whatever this, the complement of this open set must be a finite set of points. Okay? And now let me show that if it contains one point, that it's actually infinite. So the idea is that because these S alpha are Frobenius invariant and I have this isomorphism, one gets that you have this isomorphism. Sorry, I should have inverted E here. So this isomorphism is with E inverted. And see, and now what you can do is you can, if I have a point which is not in U, right, then using this isomorphism, I can do one of two things. So if this point, if the valuation of this point, if the absolute value of kind of the absolute value of this point is less than pi, in other words, it's further into the disk than this point pi, right? Which we're, that's what we're doing when we invert here, E here. Then I can take all its Frobenius images, and this isomorphism will tell me, this will relate kind of the structure of P at X and its Frobenius images. And it's easy to see that if it's not a torsor here, then it won't be a torsor at any of these points. So I get an infinite sequence of points going into the origin. Okay. If I'm greater or equal to pi, then I can't make this argument just because one of these points might hit the point U equals pi, right? And I don't have the result there. But then I can go in the other direction and use descent, right? So if I have this is greater or equal to pi, then I still have this isomorphism with the inverted, and if I look at the pre-images of X, then I see that one of these, the P is not a torsor at any of these. Okay, so this gives a contradiction. Okay, so now what do we have? So we have that, so I'm going to show finally P is a GZP torsor. So what do we have? So what we've proved is it's a torsor at the generic point of the mod P fiber, on the generic fiber when I invert U, but also on the generic fiber in a formal neighborhood of U. So if I put all those together, these guys together, I mean, these two certainly cover the generic fiber, and then I can add the generic fiber of the generic point of the mod P fiber. So all together, I get that U is a closed point, that the P is a torsor on the complement of the closed point. Okay, so how do we get to the closed point? That's what we want, finally. So now, there's the following argument. So P is a torsor, a GZP torsor over U. So it's classified by some class in here. Okay. So I can map it to the corresponding GL torsor. And this is trivial because a GL torsor is a vector bundle. And here I have a regular local ring of dimension 2. So a vector bundle on the complement of the closed point always extends, and so it can be trivialized. So this is actually 0. Okay, but because GZP is reductive, this quotient here is an affine scheme. And again, using the fact that the complement of the closed point, that sigma is a regular local ring of dimension 2, if I have a point of U in an affine scheme, it always extends to sigma. Okay? So what that tells me is that any point here actually extends to a sigma value point, right? Which means that any torsor here extends to a torsor over sigma. Which means it's trivial by what we said before. And so then P is trivial. And so so you get an isomorphism like this on U, and then you can extend it. Okay. So that's the key lemma. So I want to say just a word about how to go to the case of abelian type. So I don't think I've ever talked about that. So we've made these models but when G of X is of Hodge type. Okay, so now let's consider the case of abelian type. So to do that, I have to recall something about the ogre of how you construct the Shimura varieties for abelian type from the case of Hodge type. So what you do, so suppose you have G of X of Hodge type, and G2 will be the one of abelian type. So I have a central isogeny and induces an isomorphism on the adjoint Shimura data. And the way that the point is that the way that the construction works, it involves the action of the points of the adjoint group on the Shimura variety. So if I have G of X, that's my guy of Hodge type, I can look at the Q points of the adjoint group, which lie in, sorry, there should be a plus over here, which lie in the connected component of the identity for the real points. And then this guy here acts on this product here just by conjugation. I mean, if I have a co-character, right, I can just, the adjoint group acts on G by conjugation. So if I have a co-character here, I act on it by conjugation. If I have a point here, I act on it by conjugation. This condition, this plus condition, is just to guarantee that when I act on this co-character by conjugation, it ends up in the same orbit under the real group. Okay, and one can show that this action actually induces an action on the Shimura variety. So if you put this action together with just the action of the points in the finite Adels by right translation, you get this kind of structure. You get a semi-direct product. So the semi-direct product acts, and then there's some subgroup of the Q points of G, which kind of acts trivially under this. So you divide it up, and then you have this star notation. Okay, and so I said that the relation between the Shimura varieties for these two Shimura datum is actually by the connected component. So let me consider a connected component, and then what I can do is I can look at the subgroup. So then I have on the Shimura variety I have this semi-direct product acting, and I also have I also have the Galois group acting on the set of connected components. Okay, and so this connected component, yes, over Q bars. So now I can just look inside here at the stabilizer of a connected component. So that gives me something. And the key point, it doesn't matter what this group is, it's an extension of the Galois group by a group which only depends on the derived group. That's somehow the key thing. So in particular, when I have the map from G to G2, I get a map between the corresponding stabilizers, and this lives inside this guy. So then the only point here, you'll be allowed to forget everything in a second, is that, so here's the formula. This is how you get the Shimura variety for G2 from the Shimura variety for X. So you look at the connected component, you take the product with this guy for the group G2, and then you divide out by this stabilizer. Okay, the point is that this guy maps to the one from G2, so this makes sense. So if you want, now, of course, this is just for Shimura varieties, we want to do the same thing with integral models, okay? So it doesn't matter what the details are here, you can play the same game with integral models, but then instead of the Q points, you have kind of the integral points, but the key thing is when you do this, at some point, you're going to have to divide out by this group, all right? And this group, whatever it is, it somehow involves the adjoint group. Involves the action of the adjoint group. Now, so when you divide out, you want to show that what you get is still smooth. Okay? When you do this on the generic fiber, you can check this using the it's clear that if you get the Shimura variety, it's smooth. So in some sense, you're using the complex uniformization to do this. But if you want to do this in positive characteristic, you need a description of the adjoint points of this group. So that's the last thing I just want to mention, is how do you describe the action of this adjoint group, say in the case of Hodge type, moduli theoretically, right? So we know that our Shimura variety of Hodge type, it's a modular space of abelian varieties with certain Hodge cycles. We know we have this adjoint group acting on it, so it should be able to, it should be possible to describe this moduli theoretically. So here's how you do it. So the general setup is, suppose you have an abelian scheme over a base S, and suppose it's equipped with an action of an affine group scheme. And equipped, I always mean the isogeny categories. So I should have said this affine group scheme is over Q. Okay. So now let's consider a torsor, a Z torsor. Suppose I have a Z torsor, and I consider its affine ring. Then I can kind of make this construction. So I can consider just, if you like, a pre-sheaf, which on S scheme T, I just do the following thing. I take the points of T, of A, the T points of A, and I tensor with this torsor, and then I take the invariance. Okay? So it's like the kind of thing you see in p-adic Hodge theory, you're like tensoring with invariance, except that here you have like something unusual in that context, and the points will be abelian varieties. Sorry. All right. It's my wife calling to say that your time is up for the talk. all right. So this turns out to be a sheaf, and it's represented by an abelian variety up to isogeny. It's not so hard to show. And there are two ways to view this construction, just to relate it to something more familiar. So if you're being kind of high-minded, if you think of A as some kind of motive, and it corresponds to a representation of a summotivic Galois group, then if you have a representation of a group, right, then the Z, which is acting on the abelian variety, has to commute with this motivic Galois group, and so you can form this, you can make the corresponding construction, which looks a little bit more like what you would have in p-adic Hodge theory, and again, you get another representation of this G motivic. It's also a little bit like the situation where you have a semi-elliptic curve, and you have an ideal in the ring of integers of the CM, in the quadratic imaginary field, and then you kind of twist the elliptic curve by that ideal. Except in that case, that's a construction which, if you work up to isogeny, of course, becomes trivial, right? So this is somehow non-trivial up to isogeny. In any case, so we have this construction, and this can be used to describe the action of the adjoint group in the following way. So if I have a point in my Shimura variety, I look at the corresponding abelian variety, then by kind of general, it's a general fact that this is equipped with an action of the center of the group. So that's going to be our Z, this torus, the center of the group. And then if I have a point in the adjoint group, I can look at its fiber. I can look at the fiber of this map from G to the adjoint group of this point. This is a torsor under the center. And then the action is described in the following way. So at least on underlying abelian varieties, if I want to describe the abelian variety at the image of my point x, gamma of x, then what do I do? It's just described in the following way. I take my original abelian variety, I take this torsor and I twist it, using that in the way I described earlier. Okay, so I think my time is over.